What have you been doing over the past year?
The past year? During September, November. No, in September we came over here and we went to the UCLA. Well, that was last...
Yeah, that was
oh, God. Well,
you mean this...
Yes, we came over to the Washington International at the beginning of November. And then I had a week there, intensive week, and then Mary went down to Florida, and I went back, she wasn't going to come with me, I went back to go to Sweden. Well, before that, when we were over in Florida in September, end of October, beginning of September, and from Miami, we went to Rio and South Africa, round and round South Africa, and back to England. Then we came back to Washington. Then I went back and I went to Sweden, and I'm back here.
From Miami to Rio de Janeiro, and from Rio de Janeiro to Johannesburg.
Yeah.
How did you find time to write?
I don't know. I've been fairly energetic since the beginning of the year. We came over to Florida, Fort Lauderdale, 1st of January, and I was quite energetic there. I've been back to England twice in that time. I got back from England yesterday. I went back to the Grand National on Saturday. That was last Saturday. Great race.
I understand you have an honored seat at the Grand National.
I don't know about an honored seat, but I'm one of the trustees of the fund which has been organized internationally to try and save the course. They're trying to raise £4 million to save the course. The Jockey Club are going to buy it, and they haven't got £4 million in their pockets. A national appeal has been launched, and Paul Mellon, Lord Derby, a fellow called John Smith, and myself are the trustees.
Why is it threatened?
Oh, it's been running downhill for a number of years, and Lord Sefton, who owned it years ago, he sold it to Mrs. Topham, who had been running it, Topham's, and then she sold it to a man called Davis, who bought it hoping to develop it into an industrial site, put up factories and houses all in the middle of Corson. But it was one of Lord Sefton's wishes in his will that none of this can happen. They can't build there, and the government won't let them build there. So Bill Davis, he bought it for about £1 million, I think, so he's selling it for about £4 million. He was wanting £7 million at one time, but he came down to £4 million. And £4 million is a lot of money to raise. It's about $9 million, isn't it? And it's too much for the Jockey Club to find in their own pockets, so this national appeal has been launched. Everyone in Britain and a lot of people throughout the world feel that this is part of the British heritage, and we don't want to lose it, and so I hope they're all digging in their pockets.
Is the track not paying its way?
No, it hasn't been doing for years. They only have one meeting a year, 3 days, and it's in a terrible state of repair, and a lot of money's got to be spent on it.
But one meeting a year?
One meeting a year.
What do they do with the track the rest of the year?
Well, it's farmed, the middle of the track, or middle. And they did have a motor track around there. In fact, the motor track is still there, but they don't have any race meetings there now. They've tried, but it's in an industrial area, and somehow it's been allowed to get to a very low state in not only repair, but in everyone's mind. But last 5 years, it has improved a lot. The big bookmakers, Ladbrokes, they leased it, and they've been running the Grand National, and they're gradually bringing it up to its proper level again. It sank about 10 years ago. About 9,000 people would go there just for a day's racing in 1 year, really, or I suppose 3,000 or 4,000 went the other 2 days, but 9,000 people went on Grand National Day. But now, last Saturday, there were 50,000 people there, I suppose. And The last year I rode in it, in 1956, before televising of the race took place, there were a quarter of a million people there, 250,000 people. But when television came in, people didn't go there because they could see it much better on television. They missed the atmosphere, of course, but when you're there, you can't. They go. The horses go almost 2 miles away from the grandstand on a big circuit, and people on the grandstand couldn't see them, so they'd rather watch it at home. But now I think they're bringing it back, and I hope that we're going to save it.
I've noticed a lot of the racetracks in the United States do all sorts of things to attract people. They'll have musical acts and all sorts of come-ons.
Yes.
But that doesn't happen in England, does it?
Well, they are doing it occasionally now. They were going to have the sort of what they call the parachute droppers coming down last Saturday. I forget what the parachute regiment, I think. But the weather was... No, the weather was all right, but they cancelled it because it was the weather during the week was terrible, and they put this off, and then Saturday was a lovely day. they didn't have them there. But they had a very good crowd and a very good feeling there last Saturday.
Did you send Mary out to do all the research for your latest book, Banker?
I didn't send her out. I went with her to a lot of it. We went to two merchant banks in London, and they were very, very helpful. And we also went to the UCLA in Los Angeles, and Jeremy Thompson, the pharmacologist there, he was a great help. And he read the manuscript before it went to the publishers, and the merchant bankers did in London. And I'm glad to say that there was just the odd thing that they once said, well, you ought to change this. I did have... I was described in the merchant banks that they had no money around, no big books, no checkbooks. And they went through, they said, well, you better not say no checkbooks. We have got the odd checkbook in the drawers.
Sometimes when we do reports about authors of fiction, we have to back into them with some factual information. And one of the more interesting aspects of racing today is a mystery in itself, and that's the kidnapping of the racehorse Sugar.
Yes.
Can you give me a little background? Because I understand from Putnam that you were called in as an expert. Expert what?
Well, someone
as an expert.
Someone thought I might have had a bit of experience with that, because actually the book I'm writing at the moment is to do with kidnapping.
But you did have...
Yes, Bloodsport, which was set over here in America. I think it was... I wrote it in 1966. It was published in 67 in England. I think it was 68 over here. But it was about a classic winner from England had come over to America, and he was being moved by van somewhere. I can't really remember where it was. I think it was near Kentucky. And he was hijacked. And he was taken up to a ranch in Wyoming, up in the Rockies somewhere, or Arizona, I can't remember. But he went through Wyoming because I'd been there and I wanted to bring that part of the scenery into the story. And they were going to use this particular sire to serve the mares and get the mares in foal by a classic winning blue-blooded horse. And they were going to give the credit for these foals to the rather non-entity stallions which they had on the place, because they didn't want to admit that they'd got Chrysalis there, and they couldn't do that. But it was in the days before all bloodstock were blood-tested and that sort of thing. But nowadays, I think they'd have more trouble doing that with Shergar if they had him on a stud and gave the credit to someone else. I think nowadays they do blood tests all the progeny of foals before they're entered in the blood in the stud book.
Hmm. Did you go to Ireland?
I'd been to Ireland a number of times.
Did you go after the kidnapping?
No, I didn't. No, there were three newspaper correspondents in England who went over. You know, it was a hoax. They said, "Oh, we want John Oakesy." I can't remember the other ones. We arranged for the horse to be returned through them, but nothing came about. It was just a hoax.
Now, wait, what was your role now? Wait a minute. According to Putnam, the World Press turned to Dick Francis for comment.
That was a comment.
Somehow I got the impression that you had been called in by the police and to help in the investigation.
No.
That would have been exciting for you, wouldn't it?
Well, it would have been. My brother, actually, he's a trainer up in the North Wales border, and he has a big transport business. He's always moving horses from England to Ireland and England to France and back and forth. He has a fleet of horse boxes. And one night, soon after Shergar had been hijacked, his telephone rang about 3 o'clock in the morning. He woke up, and this fellow said with an Irish voice, he said, "I've got a horse," he said, "I'd like you to come and take." And my brother said, "Well, this is an unusual time to ring up." He said, "Yes, but it's an unusual case." My brother gathered it was Shergar that they were talking about. He said, "No, I'm not going to become involved in it." He said, "Get someone else." And he put the phone down. And then about 5 minutes or 10 minutes, it rang again, and my brother, "I'm not going to bother with him," and he didn't answer the phone. And the next day, the local police came to his place, and they said, "We hear reports that you've got Shergar here." And they looked all over the place looking for Shergar, but it was someone who had tried to, probably got their knife into my brother for something and tried to put the blame onto him.
There's so many rumors surrounding Shergar. A ransom has been paid, and that was denied. That Shergar is dead, and then that was denied.
I went to Hialeah races a week last Saturday, and during lunch, a person sitting next to me told me that they'd heard reports over the radio that Shergar was going to be returned next Tuesday. That was last Tuesday. And the ransom had been met. Well, this all came from England because these reports were relayed in England. But nothing turned up on the Tuesday, and all the press and everyone connected with racing are hoping that all the shareholders who have shares in the horse don't pay the ransom, because it will make every other horse all over the country so vulnerable to being pinched. It's expensive enough now to get your mares into foal and all the expenses that breeding does cost, that it would put the expenses sky high if all the stud farms have to put up wire fences and electric fences and television screens for intruders. It would make it so expensive.
How much are they saying Shergar is worth?
He would be worth somewhere between 150 and 300,000 pounds. No, million. 3,500,000 and 5 million pounds. Something like that, isn't it? About 5 million pounds.
We're talking about millions and millions of dollars. Why is a racehorse so valuable?
Well, I was getting my figures mixed up a little while ago. If you have a mare and you take her to Shergar, it costs you £150,000 for a serving fee. That's to get your mare in foal. I don't know why the bloodstock industry is so expensive, but so many people love to own the top racehorses. There are people who have businesses like this. Robert Sangster, he has horses all over the world, and his horses cost millions of pounds, and they nearly all make money.
Is that why they're so expensive? Because they make money?
Yeah, well, what they can demand.
A broken down horse is not going to be worth much, not going to be worth anything, is it?
A broken down horse of Shergar's caliber would be worth a lot, because it doesn't matter whether his legs have gone, but he would still be able to get mares into foal, and he oughtn't to transmit from him to the mare that he's got broken down legs. But it doesn't matter whether they're, for instance, the horse which won our Derby, as we call it, Derby as you call it, Milreef, some years ago, 15 years ago, maybe a little bit more. He remained in training for another year, and did very, very well. And then he was going to run in a rather particular race at the end of his four-year-old season, and he broke his legs on the gallop. And it was one of the few cases where they mended a horse's leg and put him up in slings, and he recovered. And he recovered so well that he is now the sire of many Derby winners. Last year, he sired the winner of our English Derby and the French Derby. And he is a horse who can demand £150,000 for every mare he serves. And they have about 40 mares go to them every season. So multiply 150,000 by 40, and you can see how much is coming in every year. I won't do it now, but
it's almost impossible to get away with a kidnapping of a human being. It does happen occasionally, but very seldom do people get away with it. How can they get away with stealing an animal as big as a horse?
That's just it. I don't know. A lot of people seem to say, oh, he's been flown out of Ireland, flown to the Middle East or Africa. Well, that isn't easy. You have to have a big plane to fly a horse in. I know if you have a DC-5 or DC-6 or something like that, you can take all the seats out and build the box around the horse when you get them in. We've seen it done. My wife and I went to Italy with a load of horses one day, and they take the seats of this plane out the day before, and they led three horses in, built the stalls around them, another three in, they built the stalls around that. We took nine horses, I think it was nine, maybe ten, to Milan one day. We had three cups of coffee in Milan, and we flew back with another. We were doing this because it was when I was doing the research for Flying Finish. And the next day, that plane went on passenger duty again. But you can't, it was a big plane, and those are the sort of planes, when they're flying from one country to another, say Ireland to England or to across the continent, they have to fly in the airways and be under ground control. And ground control wouldn't expect an airplane just to be coming from a field in Ireland to join this. They'd have to prove where they're coming from and prove where they're going.
Now, can't you imagine taking a horse into a runway and loading him on an airplane in a major airport? I mean, it would be impossible.
Oh, impossible. I've always thought that Shergar, some Irish man or two or three Irishmen, trying to make a quick buck, they pinched the horse, and then the media got hold of the story and blew it up to such enormous proportions that they've got the wind up, got frightened, and they've probably got rid of the horse. The sort of person who would do that is the sort of person who wouldn't love horses, and they wouldn't mind killing him and burying him or cutting him up for dog meat and sending him along the kennels.
Is or was Shergar the best racehorse in the world?
That is difficult to say. It's very difficult to compare a horse of one generation to that of another. But he held the record time winning our Derby, and he won the race by a greater distance than ever been won before, 10 lengths. The opposition may not have been all that good, but the opposition has since proved that it wasn't all that bad, and Shergar slayed them. And one cannot really tell until his progeny get on the race course whether he was phenomenal. But there are a number of yearlings around which he had his rota of mares during his first season. And the first one, the first Shergar yearling, was born only about 10 days ago. And there's still some more to be born. It'll be interesting what they're like in 2 years' time when they go on the race course, or even three when they develop more.
Just one or two other questions, Dick Francis, because I know you have a busy schedule today. Are you keeping voluminous notes of the Shergar kidnapping? Did they steal any thunder? Did the real-life kidnapping steal any thunder from what you have in mind in the future for your books?
Well, the book I'm writing now, The Danger, it is to do with kidnapping in the racing world. I won't say here whether the horses come into it or not, but since this has developed, I have to mention that horses can be done so, but really it is to do with humans, and it's international.
So you don't feel too badly that the kidnappers beat you to the punch?
No. It's a great shame for me, although I don't need the publicity, that it didn't happen at the end of next September, because my book, The Danger, comes out in England at the beginning of October, and it would all be wonderful to have all this publicity just at that time. But all I hope is that whoever has taken Shergar, they've got him somewhere, and they will produce him at the end of September next year, and it'll be a talking point again.
Well, maybe if you could find the kidnappers, you could pay them off to keep the horse a little longer.
Yeah. Writing books doesn't give you that amount of money to pay off that amount.
Thank you.